Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Krista Joy from DisneyWays.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times and get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. We have on the line today for you someone very, very special, American actress, singer, and painter, best known for her signature role as Belle in Disney's highly successful animated feature film, Beauty and the Beast. Paige O'Hara was critically acclaimed for both her speaking and singing voices in the film and also for the unique tone that she brought to Belle, which was said to have a Judy Garland-like quality that really captured her personality. And according to the filmmakers, her voice had a similar tone of that to that of the Wizard of Oz star. So she was perfect for the role. We can't imagine anyone else doing it. We're super excited to have Paige O'Hara on the line today. Tony, can you kick it off with the first question?
I wanted to start, Paige, with a couple of years ago, you received the Disney Legend Award, and I happened to have been at that ceremony. What was your experience? You know, we, the fans, love seeing that kind of stuff, and it must be even better for you to, you know, receive something like that.
Oh, it's, you know, it's a lifetime, you know, experience that you never forget. You tell your kids and grandkids about, you know, in my case, nieces and nephews.
Right.
But, no, it was really exciting, and I was really happy that I could get all the girls together to sing for it, all the princesses.
Yeah.
So that was my idea. I was
really?
Like, we're going to all be there. Why don't we all just sing, you know? And they said, okay, great. You know, it was fun.
That was a great idea. If you came up with that, it's fantastic, because I think that really capped off that whole ceremony.
It really did. It was just, you know, it was perfect. And, you know, how often do you get the chance to get all the girls together, all the princesses, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody's off their own, you know, lives and schedules, and Leia's usually over in the Philippines. And so it was really great that we're all together.
Yeah, that's great. We're hoping that we get to talk to some more of the princesses, too.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
So tell us what it was like, Paige. First of all, how did you get the job of being Belle in this animated feature?
Well, you know, I was a working, you know, theater Broadway actress in New York when it all happened, and that's when Little Mermaid came out, and I love Little Mermaid, and Jodi is a friend of mine, and then I was just so, you know, excited that Howard Ashman had been trying to get Disney to bring animation back, musical animation back, for years. In fact, he and Alan put a lot of their own money up for Little Mermaid into the film, and then when that was such a huge hit, I saw about Beauty and the Beast in the New York Times, and I said to my agent, I got to get into this, and went in and auditioned, and I just had this really strange feeling that it was my part. You know, I've never been the real most confident auditioning person, you know, but when I saw the script and I heard the music, and I auditioned 5 times, but I just had a confidence about it. It was kind of cool because the week that I got it was my birthday, and my husband proposed to me that same week.
Oh my goodness, what a big week. That's awesome. And there
he
was like
proposed to me before I got the job, so it wasn't just because of the job.
There was like 500 other people that auditioned for this part, so that's right.
Yeah.
It's amazing. That's so great.
It was crazy.
It was made for you.
Yeah, it was just one of those strange things, you know, and a few names, you know, big stars were up for it as well, and I just you know, felt a connection with it. And Howard Ashman told me later that he knew from the first audition that I was who he wanted, which was great.
Now, I was reading that you've been acting since the age of 4.
Yep.
So, do you have a favorite memory from all the stuff that you've done that you go, you know, that's kind of my, you know, I like doing that, or I like doing this, and that's kind of my favorite thing to do? Do you have any good memories that you want to talk about?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's so many of the great, you know, parts that I've had the, you know, great joy of being able to do. You know, I mean, I loved playing Edwin Drood. I played it after Betty Buckley did it, of course, but I did the national tour, and I loved playing that role. And Showboat, you know, was my first Broadway role with Donald O'Connor as Ellie Mae Chipley, and that was in 1982. But I had been singing and performing since I was a little kid, and my mother was a director of Performing Arts High School, so I was actually in Performing Arts all through school. I went to New York when I was 17, You know, it's crazy, you know, at that age, if I'd known any better, but I had so much confidence and, you know, I just knew that that was what my dream was. And my parents basically, you know, said, you're on your own. We're going to give you, you know, your airfare. And then, so I struggled, you know, as all young artists in New York do. And I worked several jobs and I would paint at night and sell my paintings on the street and go to class, audition. And I was very fortunate that that was a time in the mid, it was like 1975, where there were a lot, there's a lot of work in New York. So it's I think it's more difficult now, but at that time there was a lot of shows and I was very fortunate.
Yeah, I think back in that time, I think there was a lot more television that was being recorded in New York, and now all of that seems to be shifted to, you know, the West Coast.
Yes, that's true. And in fact, I did a couple of soap operas, you know, when I got cast, just because it was such great money. I hated doing them, between you and me. I just hate, you know, having to get on TV and then they change your lines at the last minute, because I'm one of those that likes to rehearse, you know, and mm-hmm. a lot of the soaps, you don't get really any rehearsal. But those, yeah, I did some of those on the side and voiceovers and stuff. And it was an amazing time. And I was really lucky that I got to do, I got to play several roles in the Jerome Kern, you know, Princess Theater shows from the early 1900s that we revived at Carnegie Hall. And that was one of the highlights, too, being in New York.
Yeah.
Wow. And I think people would love to hear about what you're doing now. Can you share that with everybody?
Yes, it's crazy. I've last few years been signed with Disney Fine Art as an artist, and I'm painting Beauty and the Beast oil paintings, and that's kind of a second full-time job to being on the strip at the Luxor doing Menopause the Musical. For 9 years, that crazy
wow.
musical has been running. And it's very funny. It's a comedy. I play an aging soap star. and it brings women together, and it's really been really fun. It's been a long time. 9 years is a long time. But I take breaks mm-hmm. and do work with Disney, and that part is great, too, to get away from it now and then and have a fresh look when I come back.
Yeah.
So, nice variety.
You know, we've spoken to a couple of other people that have done Disney art. And so do you find that relaxing? Is that like a way to kind of just, you know, let go and just put some stuff up on the
canvas?
You know
something, that is so true, because it's always been my escape since I was 3 years old. I've always painted. And I remember even going to acting class when I was a little girl, and I would paint watercolors for my teacher so she'd be easier on me in class. And she always said, are you going to be an artist? Are you going to be an artist? And so painting has always been something I've always done. I've usually, you know, growing up, I would copy the, you know, my favorite artists, you know, Turner and Sargent and Da Vinci. And then I started doing, you know, some of the animation stuff as a suggestion of Rodel, who's one of the most popular Disney artists. And he brought me to one of his events and said, do one of your bell paintings and we'll sell it. And then the president of Disney Fine Art happened to be there, and he saw that it sold right away and people wanted more. And that's when they signed me. So, but it is relaxing. It's, you know, it's a joy. It's a wonderful creative escape.
That's great. Talking about the menopause, that has got to be a completely different experience than sitting in your, I'm using my air quotes, your PJs, recording the voice for Belle. You know, that's live, it's in front of people, so that's got to be a completely different experience for you.
Oh, it's totally different, but geez, that's where my background is stage, so actually doing Beauty and the Beast was something I learned that was new. You know, doing a film, I learned a lot. I mean, when I first came in to record Beauty and the Beast, Howard Ashman was like, you're playing to the second balcony. No, it's film, you know. And so that was, being on stage is my, you know, it's second nature to me. But I learned so much, and then when they hired Robbie Benson and we were allowed to record together, that's, I think, part of why the film had such a wonderful success. Because Robbie and I, they don't do that anymore. They put you in a room by yourself.
Yeah, right.
But it was an amazing experience, and all the years of voiceover from Disney, it was a real blessing.
Do you think you'll do more, maybe, live-action movies in the future, and, you know, maybe some other stage things? I mean, where do you think your next project will be once you're done with menopause? I mean, menopause and music.
Actually, I'm out of menopause in life. I'm feeling really good. I want to do some more concert work, which I haven't really had the time or energy to do with being in the show, when you're on every night, six nights a week. So I'd like to put together some more concert work. I'd like to do more of my charity work with kids, which I love. If a movie or a film happens, whatever, there's a lot of filming in Las Vegas now, which I haven't had time to really go pursue. But that's kind of where I see myself going next, is maybe concert work and putting and the other project, which started a few years ago. I played Judy Garland. I took a leave of absence from menopause to play Judy Garland in a musical, and I'm thinking of putting together a smaller version of that show, because that's sort of a glove for me. I grew up idolizing her and singing along with her, and I think that's the part now at my age that I think I could do it some justice. So I'm hoping I can do that soon.
That sounds amazing. That would be great.
So can you tell us, what would you like for people to know about you that they may not know about Paige O'Hara?
Paige O'Hara is a diehard basketball fan and diehard LeBron James fan. I follow all the teams in the NBA. I've been following LeBron. I fell in love with basketball with Michael Jordan. My mom was a huge fan. But then I watched LeBron play as early as 12 and 13 years old, because I have all the special packages of all the NBA, and I saw him playing, and I just fell in love with this kid and his great talent, and it's been really fun to watch the ride with LeBron in the NBA.
I love that. Yeah, so how do you have time? Do you, like, look at your phone between sets? How do you have time to follow it and stuff?
I have to TiVo every game. I have the NBA DirecTV package. I get every single game, so I just TiVo everything and then watch when usually late at night, because I'm a late night person. Uh-huh. Usually after I finish painting or whatever, I put on the games and fast forward to the free throws. But no, I'm a diehard LeBron fan.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah. I feel like his mother. I mean, I fell in love with this kid when he was dating his wife that he has now. He's been with her since they were 13 years old.
Savannah. Oh, wow.
And it's just a really cool story.
Does LeBron know that you're a fan?
I am told that just a month ago, one of his school classmates came to my show and brought her mother, because, I'd be the mother age. And she said, yeah, I talk to LeBron all the time. And then I started talking about the kids he went to school with. And she said, do you know who he is? And I said, I knew all the kids that Drew and all the kids that he, grew up playing with. And she was so impressed. She said, I'm going to let LeBron know. And Savannah, his wife, actually was in charge of an event that I sang at in Fort Lauderdale a little over a year ago for the Covenant House. And she was told to make sure her husband knows how much I love him. Think how great he is.
Oh, that's neat. So, such a thrill, right?
And now that he just had a little girl, I'm hoping that, give her a year. I'll be sending her Bell stuff.
right. Oh, yeah. You guys can have dinner together and everything. It'll be great.
Tea time with Bell.
Yeah.
There you go. Wouldn't it be good? I love it.
Now, with the paintings and stuff, you have an online place where people can go and purchase the paintings, or how does that work?
They can see my artwork through Disney. I'm also in a gallery here in Las Vegas called the Renaissance Gallery at the Palazzo Shops. And it's I have originals. That, a lot of my originals are in that gallery here in Las Vegas, but they could also be purchased through Disney Fine Art. And the Disney Fine Art has, we have reproductions and artist proofs and stuff that they sell. It depends on, what their price range and what they're looking for, because they make multiples of some of my more popular paintings. Just on the internet, and now I'm seeing that other people are purchasing them from Disney and selling them elsewhere. So you're just going to punch in this Paige O'Hara Fine Art, and it's all over the place.
Wow. Yeah.
Thank God.
I think we don't want to take too much more of your time up, Paige, but where can people find you on the internet and even in real life? Where can they follow you?
Really just punch in. I don't really do Facebook. I have a Facebook that I do occasionally with a friend of mine just because of the lack of time. But there is a Facebook that, there's something that you really want to talk to me or whatever and get in touch with me, or on the internet, just PaigeO'Hara.net. And of course, I need to mention the signing I'm doing in Miami. That's going to be next weekend.
Okay.
Oh, how wonderful.
That's now, you're a native Floridian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And L.A., Michael said. I need to also say L.A. L.A. is in December.
Okay.
Are you? So you're born in Florida, is that right?
Yes, I was born in Fort Lauderdale.
And, oh, my goodness.
Born and raised in Fort Lauderdale, and my mom was a great teacher there, and my stepfather that I was raised by was the chief architect of Fort Lauderdale. So my roots are very, very involved there. But we've made Las Vegas our home now, but I miss Fort Lauderdale a lot. I really do. I miss the ocean, and I go back as much as I can.
Yes. Well, I'm born and raised here in Orlando, and the weather right now is beautiful, so I hope you can come down before it gets hot again.
Oh, I hope so, too. I would love it.
That would be great. Well, thank you again so much for your time, Paige. It was such a pleasure talking to you, and we just wish you all the best with the painting and the musical, and oh my goodness, so much going on. That's awesome. So we're excited to share with everybody. Thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Paige.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
OC Dugout is excited to announce a public autograph signing on Saturday, December 6, 2014 at the Frank & Sons Collectibles in Anaheim, California. You can get your tickets at ocsportscards.com. Our guest today will be doing autograph signings at this event along with several other voices of Disney. The one and only Richard White, voice of Gaston from Beauty and the Beast.
Yay.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, Richard, first of all, we're pleased to have you on the show. Is this the first event that you'll be doing with Paige since 1992?
No. we did one not too long ago.
Okay.
Within the last year, I think, something like that. These are fun.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
To have both of you in the same place, that would be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. There were a number of openings. Paige and I have known each other for quite a long time. We did some shows together before ever we did Disney stuff together.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
How did you get that coveted role of Gaston? And did you have any interesting experiences while doing the voiceover for Beauty and the Beast?
Well, I did. I got the part the way just about everybody else did, I think, by audition. They did a blind audition. The way that works is that they go all around the country with a tape recorder and record everybody that they can. They put out casting calls to everybody that they know, every agent that they know, and anybody else that they know, and put them all on tape, send the tapes off to California where they sat down and listened to them. Came up with the sound that they wanted to hear. I felt quite honored to have been pulled out of that that bunch. It was a fascinating experience, actually, in New York to go into those auditions, because generally, when you go into an audition in New York, you see a lot of faces you recognize, because a lot of people of the same type get called in for the same types of roles. So you know a lot of the same people that are going into audition with you most of the time. But for this situation, it's completely different. There was every color, every shape, every size, every age of person could come in for Gaston, because the only thing they were interested in is what you sounded like.
Yeah. Do you think they were looking for a certain kind of voice actor with a certain kind of character?
Oh, sure. Howard Ashman, who was pretty instrumental in casting and, just about every other aspect of Beauty and the Beast, felt that these were musicals, basically. He was writing musicals to be animated. And to that end, he wanted musical performers. He wanted Broadway actors and actresses. And so Beauty and the Beast is almost exclusively Broadway people.
Yeah, so it was that wonderful baritone voice, probably, that helped you get the job.
Well, yeah, I mean, he liked people. He especially wanted people to be able to sing and act. He wanted one voice to be both the singing voice and the dramatic voice of the character. He wanted it all in one person, and he wanted people who were used to combining acting and singing into one character. So Broadway people were the kind of people to do that.
Yeah, well, you were amazing in this role. I can't imagine anybody else being Gaston but you.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Now, did you have any feeling at the time that this movie was going to be such a hit? I mean, it's an icon at this point.
It is. Yeah. Well, remember, we were the second one in this little renaissance. Little Mermaid had already been made and was hugely successful. There was a wonderful market for it. But everybody saw in Little Mermaid that they were really giving these musicals the kind of careful attention that they gave them years and years ago, when Snow White and Cinderella and those sorts of films were being made. We felt that we were sort of in that same genre. So we were all very thrilled. You sort of had the feeling that you were part of an icon or you know, even as it was being done, part of history. And we also knew that this was being done digitally. Remember, digital stuff was pretty new at that point. Putting an entire film on digitally was a new idea. And so we had some idea that it was going to last forever. And that was kind of nice.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first films that Disney had done, especially the ballroom scene, where you kind of got that 360 view of the characters dancing. That was the first time they had digitalized something like that.
Yeah, they still wanted everything drawn. Everything that was alive at that point was still supposed to be drawn by hand. At least its first iteration, nothing was completely computer generated. But they did use the computer for things that nobody could really do before that. For example, as you say, that ballroom scene where the camera does a 360 degree turn while it's lifting. That sort of perspective was almost impossible to do by hand.
Yeah, that would have been tough. Now, did you have input into what the character would be, how he would sound, what is...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
It's a very collaborative process. One of the things that some people perhaps don't realize is that my personal involvement on the film was about 2.5 or 3 years.
Wow.
So it went back and forth quite a lot during that time. Others, of course, worked longer on it. I don't mean to suggest that it was accomplished in 3 years, but my personal involvement wasn't that long. During the time that I was involved with it, the character's appearance changed pretty dramatically. At one point, he had quite the snazzy mustache. believe it or not, there were many, many meetings, I understand it, regarding what his chest hair would look like.
Wow.
Should it be straighter or more curly, or you know, things like that. Like I say, his appearance changed pretty dramatically in various renderings during that time, so... Yeah, and I think some of that had to do with what they heard or saw in the actors. Every time you were recorded, you were also filmed so that the artists could get every nuance of your facial expressions and of your whatever physicalization you might add. So anything like that was fodder for the artists, and could very well end up in the film. And there was lots of re-recording. You can put down lines in one session pretty easily, but then 6 months later they would come back to you and say, you know, well, we've written ourselves into a corner here, or we've drawn ourselves into a corner here, we want to lay this down again. And just about anything that you can imagine, they can draw. That's kind of, a very collaborative and freeing feeling. It's very exciting.
Yeah, that's great. So they really were not just using a voice. They just didn't want a voice. Since they're filming you, they're really drawing you acting as this
character. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's been described as an actor's playground, you know, where they sort of put you in a darkened room just let you play.
Yeah.
You're not even restricted a lot of the times by another actor. You're not necessarily reacting to what somebody else has laid out. You're free to do things your own way. And then they go back to other actors and then have them react to those things that they thought were good from that last session and back and forth and in and out. So, it becomes a very free, very creative, very expressive kind of a situation. So much fun. So much fun.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a really fulfilling thing to do. What would you say was the most fulfilling part of working on this particular Disney animated feature?
Well, probably the fact that my daughter, when we did the New York premiere, my daughter was 6 years old. So she was perfect age.
Yeah.
I mean, she saw it as it was being created. She saw the early line drawings. She heard it all the way along, she got to see, you know, the first versions of it, and she got to see the first performances of it. And watching her face was awfully, awfully satisfying.
Fantastic. We know that there's so many things that nobody does quite like Gaston. What would you say no one does quite like Richard White?
Oh, heavens. I don't know. You've got me on that. It's true. There's very little that anyone could do like Gaston, but Richard White, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, here in the Florida Disney parks, they have, at the Hollywood Studios, they have a Beauty and the Beast, you know, live show. Have you ever had a chance to see that?
I haven't. I was down in Florida a number of years ago when Gaston was in the parade, and okay. I saw a little bit of that. So I have some notion of what that was. But no, I've not actually seen that show.
Yeah. Yeah,
did they actually have that Gaston in there?
Yes.
Is the real guy there? You got the real guy?
Well, we have a, you know, we have a version of Gaston. We don't have the real Gaston. That's you.
I see. Okay.
We have someone acting as Gaston. Let's say that.
Well, good for him. Good. I wish him luck.
Oh, he's very popular. So then we have this new area of the park here in Orlando, new Fantasyland. Gaston has his own tavern. And so he's outside there, you know, quite often making the female guests blush and just being adorable. So have you had a chance to come down and see any of this?
No, but I've seen pictures. I haven't made it to the park in a long time.
Oh,
I've been very busy. But it's on my list. I have to do this because, like I say, I've seen lots of pictures. I have lots of friends who have had their pictures taken in Gaston's tavern. sitting in his chair, I might add.
Yes. I'm surprised they did not bring you down there for this opening. That would have been a great opportunity.
It would have been great fun. One of the things that's tricky is matching up schedules. You know, they have openings and so forth, and if I'm in a different town or doing a different show, then that makes it hard. I wasn't even able to attend the first performance in California when the finished film was first shown. I wasn't able to be there because I was off doing another show.
Well,
yeah, but I did get to see it in that theater just a few days late.
Aw, well, if you come back to Orlando, Tony and I live here. We'll be happy to show you around the park, so you don't need a map or anything.
I'll hold you to it.
All right. Do you think you would do another animated film? I know you've done some awesome musicals. You've done Jekyll and Hyde and Phantom of the Opera, which must be so different than doing animation. What do you prefer, and would you do another animated film?
Gladly. Like I say, animation is so much fun. There are really no limitations. You're free to do anything that you can imagine. So it has that going for it. A live performance is your entire body inhabiting a space and reacting to other people and with the music in the room and performing live. So that has its own satisfaction. I couldn't possibly pick between them, but I would gladly do another one. You have one up your sleeve?
We wish we did.
Me too. Put me on the list.
We read somewhere that you're a reverend.
I have heard that too. I don't know where anybody heard that. It's completely made up.
Oh, really? Okay.
It is absolutely untrue. I'm so glad to get the chance to debunk this myth.
Well, good.
I have no idea where that came from. I have read it myself. I don't know what it's about. Not me.
It's strange what you find on the internet.
Yes. And if you believe everything that you read on the internet, well, a bridge I'd like to sell you.
Right. Exactly.
Did you want to share anything that you're working on now?
Well, I'm about to go into rehearsal for a new production, Gigi.
We're going
to open at the Kennedy Center around just after Christmas, and we'll play there until around Valentine's Day and come back to New York and look for a theater and open it up on Broadway as soon as we can, I hope.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah.
Wonderful.
So we had interviewed Pat Carroll a long time ago, and she had more of a preference to the stage than film or TV. What's your preference, Richard?
Well, it really is in so many ways apples and oranges. The performance part itself is more satisfying on the stage because it's a direct connection between you and the audience and you and the other actors and so forth, and you have a better sense of the whole for the performance. Whereas, TV can be done in little sections, little drips and drabs, and, but the money, you really can't compare the stage to film or TV.
Yeah.
So all of us stage actors hope to balance that nicely, lots of TV and lots of film.
Yeah. Right.
That's a shame, because I think a live performance has certainly more for the audience. You can see the actors, you can see their reactions to the audience, and it's almost like an interaction between the two.
It really is. There's an intimate relationship between the two, and you share energy back and forth across the footlights.
Yeah.
A live performance with missing either side of that equation falls flat. Actors thrive on the audience's energy.
Yeah.
So there's a dynamic there that doesn't exist in any other performance venue that I know of, and it's very addictive as a performer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
I would imagine so. Well, thank you so much for your time. I know you've got somewhere to be tonight. We just appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. Don't hang up yet, but we want to go ahead and close the show. Thank you, Richard, for being with us. We appreciate it.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc. are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you.